KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, where we just saw Evan Carter go, I would probably say, two for six. There is no way that was six for six.
Look, the new hitting coach is talking to him. He's like, I got nothing to say to you. You're too good.
Oh, you don't think he has anything to say about his hands on the bunt placement?
Well, he needs to get his left hand down a little bit further.
I will tell you, he dropped an excellent bunt. So if you want to say 3 for 7, I would give you that.
I will add that I don't think anybody's hitting a home run today. This is just my theory here.
If you hit a ball down the line right now to right field, you can.
Yeah, maybe there, but that's it. The wind, the way that it's coming in today, just looks like it's going to be a tough one to park.
It's a Tyler Mahle day.
It might be. Yeah, it might be a great day for him. So there you go, CG. Kevin.
Now, Mike, this is something that you suggested we talk about, and we've been waiting on this for a few days as well.
This is the penultimate game.
That's right. Alec, can you go ahead and give us that shortstop highlight, please?
The 1-2, and that ball is hit high and deep into right. Lowe going back, looking up, it's gone. Six rows up and straightaway right, Corey Seager with a 3-run dinger.
Now, you guys might want to debate the parameters of this to begin with, because we wanted to kind of do a breakdown of where does Corey Seager rank in the key categories among the big five shortstops. So the big five shortstops I have as Seager, Witt, Betts, Gunner, and Lindor. Now,
it's amazing that Betts is on that list.
And that's the tough part. Yeah, he belongs there. Defensively, because we know offensively I can judge him in all the categories against these guys, because it doesn't matter where you play position-wise. In this offensive stuff. Sure. Defensively, it's just it's going to be very tough, because Betts has played such a limited amount of games at shortstop. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm just going to rank him last in all defensive categories until he proves to me more.
Okay, then do you want to stick with four for the defensive categories?
I would say for defense, let's just stick with four, or you guys can rank Mookie Betts if you want better defensively. He's played it such a little amount of time in his life, it would be tough for me to put him ahead of these guys that have played the position for at least 2 years in the major leagues. Gunnar Henderson being the guy who's only done it 2 years in the majors.
It also, I think there are a lot of positions that I could throw Mookie Betts at and go, yeah, he's a top five at that position, just because that's how good of a baseball player
he is. He's the best right fielder in the game, but he's not going to play it this
year. So the first category we have is clutch hitting.
Yeah.
Where do you think Corey Seager fits in that category? Because I think you can make that argument. He's at the top of the heap.
Yeah, I would say number one.
I would say number one, but I don't mind any of these guys coming up in a situation to win the game. Like, these are five premium guys. Last year, I know it was just one at bat, but against Philadelphia, when Philly was the favorite, Francisco Lindor hit the big grand slam home run to change the series against the Phillies. So these guys are all awesome at it. But I would have right now Corey Seager number one. I would have Mookie Betts number two.
Okay.
And then from there, now I get into not Francisco Lindor, but I get into the potential of Witt and the potential of Gunnar Henderson.
See, I think Witt's going to be at the top of one of my other hitting categories, but I'm with you on that.
See, when you're talking about clutch, the one guy that I've seen do it in the most in the biggest clutch moment was Seager. That's why I put him at number one. I've seen him do it multiple times, MVP, World Series MVP. So
and
that
I remember,
definitely does it.
I know this isn't fair, but I remember when Mookie said thank you when they took out Blake Snell in the 2020 Texas World Series, against Tampa. And then he came through big with a double. So I feel great if Mookie Betts is at bat. Like, he's coming up game on the line. The only reason I'll put Witt at three, and then I'll put Francisco Lindor at four and Gunner at five. And Gunner, I would love to have him up. He's awesome. But Gunner hasn't done a lot yet come playoff time.
True.
Where he's carried a team to a victory.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this then. In the next category, because I don't know if I'll be alone on this, hitting for power, I think I'm going to put Gunner number one. Now, I know he obviously, him and Witt are going to be a lot different in terms of Lindor and Seager and Betts, but I think you've seen in the two full seasons that he played, Gunner put up high 20s home runs and then followed up with high 30s home runs. I think I'm going to put Gunnar at number one.
I'm with you, and I'm going to say this where it gets into another category where he's going to finish last, to be honest, is if Corey Seager ever stayed healthy for the Texas Rangers for 150 games, he might hit over 40 home runs.
Could happen.
And then all of a sudden you're like, Seager's the one with the best power, but until he stays healthy for 150 games for the Rangers, I am going to be with you and put Gunnar Henderson as the best power hitting shortstop.
I'm going to go on average exit velocity here real quick, if you don't mind me throwing this into the mix. Number one, O'Neill Cruz, 95.5 miles an hour.
Not in the category.
Number two, Gunnar Henderson, 92.8. Okay. Number three, Bobby Witt Jr., 92.7. Man. Number four, Corey Seager, 92.1. Five, Ellie De La Cruz, and then six, Francisco Lindor. So when it comes to exit velocity, average.
Yeah.
They probably don't have Mookie as a shortstop on that cat.
He's eight. Oh, okay. He's number eight on the list there at 89.9. So, yeah, and that's the category. It was very close, though, right? Like, all those were very close, except for O'Neill Cruz.
And sorry to Ellie De La Cruz and O'Neill Cruz for not including them in this conversation.
Yeah, they're on their way up. Yeah. They're on their way up.
O'Neill might be a center fielder now.
Yeah.
Like, he's not there. Exactly. I'm not sure if he's going to play shortstop anymore.
All right. So, you just heard the numbers from Corey.
Yeah, I like that. I honestly like that as at least your exit velocity when it comes to this. But we're going with power.
Yeah.
For me, I will go with Gunnar Henderson one, and the only reason he gets the nod above Corey is Corey doesn't play 150 games to maybe give you those 40 home runs. So I will put Corey Seager at number two.
Okay.
On this,
and which is what you need. All right. What about in terms of, because defensively he's going to have some issues. Yeah. All right. Hitting for average, because for me, and this might not be fair because there's just one season, but it's Bobby Witt Jr.
It looks like it's going to be that. One. Also because his speed is superior to all of these guys, that he gets some infield hits that these guys just can't get. But I will put hitting for average, I'm going to give you Bobby Witt Jr.
Do you put Betts second?
Probably so.
Okay.
It's wild, though, because two years ago, didn't Seager hit like 335?
Yeah, and he got second in MVP.
He was still hitting with as Kevin, he'd walk up there and they'd say, how many pitches? Maybe two. I'm going to swing at the first one.
That's true.
And it's amazing that he goes up there and maybe hits bad pitches and drives them for hits.
And this also correlates to Gunnar Henderson never had to play in the league for the most part with the shift. He did for one second.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, when his first full rookie season, the shift was gone. And I will give all the analytic people all the credit in the world. They said the guy getting screwed over the most by the shift is Corey Seager. And then you saw in 23 his batting average go way up. So all of these guys are pretty good at hitting for average. The only one who I'll say is inconsistent, which I'd put at fifth, would be Francisco Lindor.
That's who I have at fifth, because I was going to go Seager 3, Gunnar 4. So if you just look at the hitting categories, Corey, we've got five players here, and we're going 1, 2, 3 for Corey Seager. So he's doing very well thus far. Yes. Now,
and this is where Zach Walchuk was upset, and I understand.
Yeah.
He was like, there's just no way he should have gone from, I believe, 6th overall in the top 100 to 17th. And it's like, a lot of this, I think, has to do with his availability.
I agree, because the last three categories are base running, defense, and health. Let's start with base running. Is this just automatic Bobby nod Witt, for Bobby? Know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not even close.
Lindor? Is Lindor faster than Betts?
That's a good call. I do know that Lindor has had a couple seasons. I need to look it up, but I think he's had a couple seasons with over 30 bags. And I know that it doesn't mean you're just like stealing bags. It means that also you're a great base runner when the ball's in play.
He had 29 and Betts had 16 last year.
Yeah, so I'll go with Lindor second. I'll go with Betts. I think he's a great base runner. Right. And then Gunnar is okay.
Yeah. But there's a gigantic gap between that.
Seager's dead last.
Corey jogs, and he has to jog because of his injury history. The Rangers, by the way, the Rangers do not want Corey Seager with his lower half injury history sprinting around the bases.
Sure.
Unless he really, truly has to. He's on second base. There's two outs, or he's on first base, and the game's on the line to score that
playoffs run. World Series.
It's like there's only a few times they ever want Corey really digging in and seeing how fast he can run, because we've seen when he does at times that hamstring goes on him.
Defense.
So taking Mookie Betts out for me because he just hasn't done it enough. This is where Corey is, you know, and I don't want to make this extreme.
He's limited.
But I'll say by far, like, he's not in this category at all. Like, he cannot compete with Lindor and Witt and Gunnar. He can't even compete with those guys defensively.
He doesn't have the range. I think he has the hands. He doesn't have the range. Because we've seen the hands work in big-time situations, too. The range for those other guys, though, I think Witt, I put him at number one.
I would put Lindor at one, Lindor, but I think it's very close. The thing is they
told... Lindor's had more work at it, for sure.
In the playoffs in 23, when they're like, hey, what about this Jackson Holiday kid you drafted number one overall in shortstop? And that's when it was told, Gunnar's way too good defensively to ever move him off of that position. So
yeah.
Gunnar Henderson is holding off a premium shortstop prospect. They're like, too bad, he's so good defensively. So I do think whether you pick Witt or Gunnar or Lindor as the best defensive player, they're all in premium defensive category, and I think Seager falls into an average defensive shortstop.
What's wild to me, Mike, is how different we in this where we are with this, the things that he's asking from what we grew up with, the shortstop position. Ozzie Smith maybe had 6 home runs in his career. Like he just didn't have home runs. Right. And we're talking about guys now
that
they're the best athletes on the field, and then they also are just cranking, and they can hit for they can do all. They are the best athletes on the field, and that's why they play the premium position. But we're naming off 5, and when Kevin, you know Ellie, those other guys.
Ellie's
coming. There's a whole list of other guys.
You're asking, they're showing highlights. I'm like, no, that's Mason Wynn. He was a rookie.
Yes.
He's like an up-and-comer for the Cardinals. So he'll be a second-year player.
And he can rocket the ball across the field.
How many career regular season home runs do you think Ozzie Smith really had?
I'll say 60.
I'm going to say 20-something.
28.
Wow.
Yeah, I just remember looking at his numbers going, he very scarcely ever hit home runs.
So, and then we get to the last category, health.
And Corey's last.
Corey's going to be last, but... I wonder if it starts out with Lindor, just because, I mean, Lindor's been around for a while. I get it with Witt and Gunnar. They both played a crap ton of games in their couple of years, but I'd be inclined to go Lindor Betts and then look at those two, and Corey Seager's going to be last.
The thing that worries me about Betts is it is different on your body playing shortstop than playing outfield.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. I think that the way he plays outfield, he's very aggressive. He's the best. But, yeah, it's just a little bit different on your body. We'll see at his age, because he's about 30, 32. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mookie in that range is like, let's see how his body handles it. But, unfortunately, this is where I think Corey Seager, these last three categories, you could say, well, he's the best hitting shortstop in the game overall. And I'd say, I agree. The problem is when we start having to rank defense and then availability is where Corey, unfortunately, taking Mookie out of the defense category, but then the availability category, Corey finishes last in that. And I hope that changes this year and next year.
Yeah, I would, Kevin, probably have him at 3, just because if I'm going to weight some things,
okay,
I feel like the power and the bat, you know, does weigh a lot for me with what he does. So I would have him overall at 3. Dead last in the health portion of it, but overall... At 3, Mike's right. When it comes to outfield, your speed, the ability to go catch up to something that maybe you got a little bit of a late jump on, that helps you a lot. On the infield, man, it's bursts, small distances that you're working within. Every once in a while, you have to go track a ball down behind third base, but there's a lot of
also
in this
the different
small
throws,
area.
The angles of throws and everything. That's why Mookie, it's so tough to gauge yet what he can and can't do at that position.
You were watching Josh Jung just a few minutes ago. If you're watching on the fan cam, we do have it up to watch some of this practice that's going on. Josh Jung was, how many different throws did you see him make to second base?
Yeah.
Just different angles so that he was practicing those because he knows he might have to face it in a season game, just like Dirk in his warm-up. He's like, that's a weird, why are you practicing on that? He's like, I might have to do it in a game.
I'm pretty lucky right now we're getting to watch Wyatt do base running and work on his.
He walked around the entire base.
Yeah.
He sprinted to first.
And oh, okay,
then he went
all right.
First to third. So this is kind of the drill. He might hit a double here.
Okay, I just saw him walking home.
He hit a single the first time, and he's hitting a double. He's not going at 100%.
Well, and I think the coach walking down the first baseline might have impeded where he wanted to go just a little bit. Hey,
so now he's going to go second to home.
So, and I wanted to throw this out there. When you said maybe you'd have him third, Corey, I was crunching the numbers. So Seager finished 1, 2, 3, 5-4-5. And so that's 20 out of a possible 29, where, like, the lower the number, the better. So that's not great because the defense really hurt him. So I think I might fall in line with Buster only. So Buster only ranked the shortstops. Who do you think of this group, Corey, is number one?
It sounded like Gunner.
Okay,
made the top of that list.
I think this is, it's going to be very close.
It is very close.
I wonder if just because of, based off of last year, Bobby Witt Jr. gets just barely the nod.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be tight.
So only has Bobby Witt at one, Mookie at two, and Gunner at three.
Interesting.
This is probably where I fall for now. Assuming you put Mookie in the shortstop category, yeah, I know we talked about the pitfalls of that, and then Corey Seager 4 and Francisco Lindor 5. I think that's fair based off of what you saw last season.
What's funny is if you look at these guys, I guess Mookie's a for sure Hall of Famer, but of the guys that have played shortstop in their career right now, Francisco is the one that has the best chance to make the Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah, of that group?
Of those guys.
For sure.
But, you know, he's done it longer than anybody, so, you know, these guys all look like future Hall. All five guys we're naming, I believe, will, as long as they stay healthy, will all five be future Hall of Famers.
And Corey was talking about the weight of things. I really look at that last category in the health. And if you could change that for Corey Seager, I think that changes a lot of my feelings. He's not the best defender, and he's never going to be, because of some of the injuries, a great base runner. If you could get him 140 games a season, like the next 3 years, then all of a sudden I wonder if we're like, well, that guy's definitely in Gunner and Bobby Witt's category.
Because his power has really picked up with the Rangers. Like, when you got him, I thought, well, the Rangers got a shortstop who defensively okay, offensively really good. I just wish there was more power with how big he is.
We talked about that a lot since he's come to Texas.
He's become a more powerful guy, and then the elimination of the shift has helped his batting average.
Absolutely. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, as we move into the expressway, we got some NFL overreaction or reality, plus some Mike likes it right here on 105.3 The Fan. We are live at spring training in Surprise, Arizona, courtesy of ASCO Equipment, your heavy equipment partner since 1960. Associate sponsor helping us out here today, the on-time experts, air conditioning and plumbing, same-day service guaranteed. And I hope that you guys are enjoying our confessional videos brought to you by Best Buy Windows and Siding. Right now, it's time for some overreaction or reality, and Alec, I just want you to be prepared, because whether Mike's saying weird things or Corey is crunching potato chips loudly just to spite him.
And Matt Hicks is showing me a picture of the chips that he's like, you need to try these.
Look, it's a very volatile situation right now, so I might need you to jump in and answer some of these questions. All right, NFL overreaction or reality. You believe there is any chance in hell that the Cowboys could actually get the number one overall draft pick in this draft?
I really don't. It would be a very weird thing for them to say, we got to move up to this spot.
Yeah.
However, is it Micah that they're doing that for?
I guess.
Because, like, it's not, it wouldn't be, it, you threw out the idea of Dak for the number one overall.
Dak money too.
Dak for the number one overall pick. Yeah, you got it.
Oh, hey, hell yeah, I would do that.
And that would be fascinating. It seems like the Cowboys are very committed to right now rebuilding this team around Dak. They signed him for that purpose. They're growing the rest of the roster around him. That seems to be what their goal is. So if they're like, okay, what else do we have that's valuable that would get us there? I don't know, you know, what else they would need to do, but what are they going up there to get? Because you're going up there to get Cam Ward? You're going up there to, that doesn't make sense to me for them to move up to that when they could have something fall in place for them, unless they're getting a King's Ransom of picks given to them for something.
Because you hope, realistically, they were just doing what normal businesses should do in this situation is, you hear the Titans are like, we'd listen to a phone call, and you make a phone call.
You have to make all the phone calls. Now, like, this is something we've demanded from them as a fan base, you didn't even call? You didn't even ask?
Yeah.
And when you did finally ask, you lowballed the guy so much that he laughed at your offer? So, yes, please pick up the phone. What did Nico Harrison not do? Call another team, it sounds like. So, yeah, pick up the phone, call the teams, even if it's laughable. Because what if they say, you know what, this is a deal we've actually been looking for. You guys have something we want.
Didn't Jerry say he doesn't make phone calls?
You're right. You're dead on about that.
Oh, Mike, this is a nonsense side question. Uh-huh. But if the Cowboys, I know it's never going to happen in a million years. I just want to know if it'd make you feel any better. If somehow Dak Prescott got traded for Patrick Mahomes, would that make you feel better about the Luka debacle?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I would, if that's the result, if the Cowboys gave up the 12th pick, Dak Prescott, and got Patrick Mahomes, that would be the greatest trade. Well, Herschel Walker's tough to beat.
That's your favorite trade of all time.
That would be.
It would help ease the pain. Awesome, yeah.
Trade.
Okay.
Yeah. I will be back on the Cowboys bandwagon if they pull that off on whatever day the draft is.
Hell yeah. NFL overreaction or reality. Cam Ward is.
Who do
your...
you think, real quick, I get to ask a question?
Okay.
I mean, how many more questions are you ever going
to
get from
well,
me?
Well, and let's be honest. Is there anything I can really do to stop you at this point?
No.
Stop touching me, please.
Okay. The Luka reaction from the Maverick fan base has been horrible. Yep. They're going to lose 30% of their season
ticket
holders.
You're probably right.
Kansas City trades Patrick Mahomes for Dak Prescott and the 12th overall pick.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't they have a way worse reaction
yes.
as a fan base than
yes.
we did with the Luka thing?
Yes, because they're both generational talents, but one of them already comes equipped with three championships.
Yeah, AFC championship games out of seven.
Yeah.
Five AFC championships, and they would trade them for Dak and the 12th.
I think Andy Reid would legitimately quit. I think he'd be like,
what are we
doing with you guys?
Yeah, there's no way Veach would ever do that because he would have to get approval from Reed, and Reed would not approve.
NFL overreaction to reality. Cam Ward is your QB1 in this draft.
Without doing a lot of research, I'd say yes, but okay. I don't. Cam Ward
He's
and Shador
right
are both nice quarterbacks who have the ability to be great, but they don't look like can't miss guys.
Yeah, I gotcha. I guess,
but I don't know. Look, last time I thought a can't miss guy is long-haired Magoo in Jacksonville. Who screwed
That's
me
Trevor
over.
Lawrence, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, Tony Khan, way
it's,
to go.
It's interesting because I was reading yesterday that Jackson Dart has been shooting up the charts.
Yes,
and yes. and he has weird numbers. And like in the game where they're like, "Hey, we might be able to slip into the college football playoff," he's like, "I'm going to throw five interceptions just to show we can't do it." But he was fun to watch this year. If you had a chance to watch Jackson Dart this year, there were some games.
I agree.
Like, oh wow, he's a really interesting quarterback to follow. It does kind of fall off after Shador, but Jackson's an interesting person. I know Quinn Ewers is in that conversation, but he's not that caliber.
I'm really curious to see what happens with him. Jackson Dart, I could see him eat.
But
definitely being gone by second round.
Kyle McCord, and then I know Jalen Milroe. McCord because he has this unique the way he plays thing, and Milroe because he has all the measurables. Like, you look at him and you're just like, that's the prototype of what I want.
Yeah.
So that's a great question, Kevin. That it's a weird spot with quarterback right now.
Thanks, Mike and Corey. He gave me a fist bump
with
for that.
A positive talk.
But thank you very much,
Duck
Corey.
Balls.
All right. NFL overreaction or reality? And this might sound like a weird question. I know Sean, RJ, and Bobby are there right now.
Oh.
NFL overreaction or reality? You care a lot about the NFL Combine.
Unfortunately, I don't.
I care a lot about the information they get from it.
Okay.
I definitely do care a lot about the information they get from it because Broaddus has told us many times, we talk about this a lot, medicals are the most important part here. You're seeing, is it Grant that you just saw from the defensive tackle from Michigan? He has a hamstring strain. And
the
he's
roller
not
coaster of Abdul Carter.
Yeah,
already.
And there have been a lot of guys. I mean, even Ashton Jeanty's like, I don't want to go on that field. Maybe there's something he doesn't want to expose. But the information they do get out of it, I think, is important. It's fun also to refer back to it. Be like, oh, man, that dude is super fast.
Yeah.
I know I saw it on film, but now I see you with this. this, but how does he do whenever he has the pads on? Oh, his pad speed versus that speed's really good. You don't see the physicality. I think I know you see the strength, but there's a physicality nature that comes along with it. But I do think the information is important.
Speaking of Indianapolis, Mike asked all the football questions. Have you ever had White Castle?
Yes.
I have. I had breakfast food at White Castle. I thought it was good.
I've never had breakfast food at White Castle. I think their burgers are horrible.
They're just little burgers.
And like they're not for me with the onions and
stuff. It's a thing where you're just like, it's not
more.
A great burger at all.
It's horrible.
But it's the idea.
Did you just have White Castle or
no,
something?
No, I've unfortunately been to Indianapolis 7,000 times. They have the Indianapolis Indians there in AAA. And guess what? My life was spent in AAA. And so near the Lucas Oil and the Indian Stadium, I don't know what they call it there, there's a White Castle not mm-hmm. far away.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it a few times. And I'm like, this is horrible. Why don't they make a burger better?
So you're going to go to a Whataburger. You get a completely different burger than you get at White Castle. I think the idea behind White Castle is, dude, I can put down 30 of these. Watch.
Yeah, do you like sliders and onions?
That's pretty much it.
It might be thicker onions than it is meat.
That's true.
Oh.
They are using the least amount of meat you can possibly use and still call it, we have meat on this.
NFL overreaction. Or reality, you are ready for the Cowboys to move on from Tank.
This is tough. Because, yes, because I'm like, but I also am like, if you have the replacement that's ready to take that over and move on, then I'm good with it. But continually talking to other people that know NFL very good, very well, they are like, hey, man, don't take for granted what he's done and what he does, what he provides for your team. So that's another thing where I'm like, well, is it something I can use? And I think I'm interested to see where Eberflus falls on this. If he's like, I have to have that kind of piece on my defensive line because he does these things so well. You don't necessarily pay a lot for run stopping. And getting to the quarterback, pressuring is still part of his game because he does help collapse that pocket. But it's just not as effective as you're thinking when you see a Myles Garrett out there.
These are always good questions, but I'm not saying this is a horrible question. But the way say it's a horrible question is this. Because the Cowboys never have a direction, it feels like.
That's
are you
true.
Guys trying to build something for the future? Or are you trying to win now?
Yeah.
And because the Jones family is like, let's go party. I'm like, that's not the answer. And they're like, no, we're going to go party. What are we trying to do here? Do you guys think we can win? Is there a legitimate chance that this team can win 12 or more games and a legitimate chance that they can win 2 or 3 playoff games and be in the Super Bowl? And they refuse to answer that question every year, it feels like. If my answer is, I think we're going to win it now.
Yeah.
I really do. If things break right and we stay healthy and all these things, we can win it now. The answer is keep Tank Lawrence. If the answer is, hey, I think we're 2 years away from getting back to the place where we can really add to this team, where we can build the offensive line right, where we feel this and feel that, then you let Tank go. But they never ask the toughest question that you need to ask about my team this year and my team 2 to 3 years from now.
Now, this might be a similar – I know he's a backup. Do you feel the same kind of way with Cooper Rush in terms of – because I know the Cowboys said they're going to draft a quarterback now – do you feel like if you thought maybe you had a shot to win now, you would keep Cooper Rush, or do you think that shot goes out the window either way with Dak if he got hurt?
He was a free agent last year. Am I crazy?
I thought it was 2 years ago.
I've been surprised how little he's got on the market. I don't mind keeping Cooper Rush when they're like, yeah, it costs $2 million.
Yeah.
Like, all right, what does a rookie quarterback cost? $800,000.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, there's not – I can't really do a lot more with 1.2. I get what you do is you kind of cut here, cut there,
and then all of a sudden
I have $25 million based off of these little moves. But I'm not – Cooper Rush, to me, has done an amazing job as a backup quarterback. I would never want him being my starting quarterback.
Sure.
But he's done an amazing job as a backup quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys.
You have to be prepared for Dak missing 8 games.
Probably so.
And
that sucks, but probably so.
I honestly don't feel like Cooper Rush is going to win me 8 games in that absence.
Okay.
So I am prepared to go in a different direction.
All right.
But if that happens, if that gets injured, you're dealing with lots of inexperience, probably,
yep.
and you're probably wasting the rest of that season. But that's the gamble they paid whenever they gave Dak his contract.
So let's see if we can call the bluff on another team who might be willing to make that gamble as the Matthew Stafford drama continues on.
The Giants?
No.
Oh, okay, all right.
NFL overreaction reality. You believe the Rams when they say that they're comfortable with Jimmy G as their starting quarterback next season.
Oh, my gosh.
All right.
If they're trying to lose?
Yeah. If they're,
I don't think
if they're
they are.
In a different direction, then sure.
No, I definitely don't think they are. Yeah, I don't believe them
either. McVay knows better than that. He's seen him play.
Now, I know it's not going to be to the Cowboys, but NFL overreaction or reality, the Titans should trade the number one overall pick if they're not taking a quarterback.
If they get the right offer, then yes.
What is the right offer to you?
Can you imagine having Will Levis and being like, he's not good enough, but I also don't want Cam Ward? Like, yeah, that's a weird spot to be in.
If the Cowboys want to trade up from 12 to 1, I need 12, I need your second, I need your first,
and
I need your second in 27 at least. And that's where we start. So I'm going down to 12. I'm getting a first next year. I'm getting a second this year. And I'm getting, but I don't even think that's enough, to be honest. I'm trying to make it favorable to the Cowboys.
Yeah, that's a big drop.
But if I'm just going from 1 to, let's say, 4, and I love Abdul Carter and I love Travis Hunter, and I know that, well, they're going to take a quarterback at 1. I know what they're trading up for. I think at 3, another quarterback's going to get taken. So if I'm going to 4, I know either Hunter or I know Abdul Carter are going to be there. It's not going to take me, like, I'm fine. I'm getting a player I really want, plus I'm picking up other assets.
Can you envision a scenario in which, and if you think it's Carter and Hunter this year or whoever, can you envision a scenario in which there's a player good enough at 1 that's not a quarterback that you're like, I'm obviously sticking?
Sure.
Okay.
If you think Abdul Carter is going to be as good or better than Micah Parsons, Micah Parsons took one of the worst defenses, and I'll give other people credit too, but he gets the most credit. He went to one of the worst defenses I'd seen in a long time for the Cowboys, and then they became an above-average defense his rookie
year. They were a great pass rush defense for sure.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn did have a lot to do with that. Right. You saw that happen too with his Washington team this year, because Dan Quinn knows what he's doing there. There are still holes in his game when it comes to Micah and what he can be, because it just seems like he can be so much more. What was the question? I'm just answering. I'm just going.
The question was about trading the number one pick.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I like your answer.
I was just piggybacking on what he was discussing.
Well, wasn't the question more of, do you envision, you changed it last second. Not that you changed the question. You just added on to it. Do you envision taking a dude, not a quarterback, number one? And
I mean, if I have, again, if I'm at that spot at number one and I have a quarterback, asking everybody to call me.
Yeah.
I'm saying, call me, give me your best offer. If I don't like it, I'm taking the best player I can because I might not get a chance to get that player to add to my team again.
NFL overreaction reality, last one for you guys. And again, I understand it could depend on the price point. You want the Cowboys to re-sign Rico Dowdle?
No.
He's a great backup running back.
That's a fair point.
He was a good starting running back. Honestly, he was a good starter for the Cowboys when they finally said, hey, we're going to actually give you the chance to do it. I don't trust his health to be able to make it, you know, consistently for 3 years. And that's what I'm kind of hoping whatever I do at that position kind of gives me that opportunity to be there for 3 years. If I'm drafting. If I'm doing it in free agency, I'm saying I've got the rest of my team built. I'm ready to rock. I'm a running back away. But I liked Rico. He was fun to watch this year. He was always an exciting conversation piece when it came to he's the good backup for you. But I can move on. You asked me if I want.
Yeah.
And I'm not
want.
I'm not there.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. And right now, it's time for Mike Likes It.
Guys, this is it.
You have another one tomorrow.
What's the... This just drives me insane. I would literally feel like killing him right now.
Oh my gosh.
In my brain, if I had a gun and blew his head off.
Jeez.
And you like me personally.
I know.
Like,
I would regret it after his head was gone. But in the moment, I'd be like, to stop the crunching noise and to stop that bag noise, if I have to kill him, I have to kill him.
Oh, my gosh.
If he dies, he
dies. You know
what?
Do you know what that you do one of those things that I feel the same way about?
Ooh.
Nail clippers.
Oh, by the way, can I ask you a question about that? Is it weird to ask you to borrow your nail clippers? Because I know you went and got some, but I got my big toenail is...
I looked today
because I thought I brought clippers.
Yeah.
I can't find them, though, in my room. I was looking for them today because I wanted to clip my toenails today.
Yeah, I need
And my wife won't get mad at me because she's like, can you do that outside?
Yes. That bothers me.
That doesn't bug me.
No, she doesn't mind the noise. She just
doesn't like... Oh, I hate the noise.
She just doesn't like the nails.
Yeah, I can't stand the noise.
I tried to throw them all in the trash, but, you know, some, like, you know, fly 10 feet away, and I didn't know where it went.
So there's a rogue nail out there, and yeah.
Yeah. So, what else?
What? This is your segment.
I started crunching, and it threw everything off.
Are you done because he crunched some chips?
It ruined my brain.
I mean, that's great.
He must die!
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, who said, was that Logan? Jake Paul?
That was Jake Paul. And then they had some candy-ass boxing fake match. And
so, all right. I know that you guys aren't really going to miss me. You're going to do great.
Yep.
Spittle's really pumped about it.
Jeez.
So, when it comes to... our moments. Now, maybe you guys are like, when it comes to yesterday, as we were walking to the car, I decided to play the
just
moment.
Cracking up back here.
I decided to play the moment where you cussed about 3 weeks ago. Yep. I don't know how long ago it was, but it was recent.
You're like, whoa, this is going to be a fun show.
In my mind last night as I was going to bed, the Bob Dabalina conversation was something that I was like, oh, we need to go ahead and grab that one because that was funny.
I would request that too because I still think
all right.
The performance and comedic timing from Corey Majors in that is amazing because he lets enough time pass because I was thinking the same thing and he goes, who is Bob Dabalina? And I was like, I also want to know the answer to that.
So, like, I'm going to miss doing that. But I think our audience is going to miss a little bit of the total chaos that I create. That I don't know I'm going to create it beforehand. Yeah. There's like a 5 second period where I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this. And I got a yesterday, Dan Galitz is one of our salespeople who we've known for a long time. And he's left me a voicemail. I haven't called him back yet, which is typical me. Izzy said, Mike, you are so professional. And what I mean by that is you are the most unprofessional professional. And I hope I hope you get what I'm saying. Like your professionalism in being unprofessionalist. Mm-hmm. Is the reason that it makes it so awesome. And I think it drives our boss crazy because he can't get it a lot of times. And so I'm like, what I'm doing is actually the audience is loving.
Yeah.
But you have to think about how this is awesome rather than just say this isn't structured, so I don't like it.
It's a very delicate balance.
I'll admit. There's obviously been times where I have not loved it, but I think most of the time I get it. I'm on board.
I will say I have no clue what you guys, I know that there's some sort of plan for tomorrow, whether it's a segment or a show, I don't know. So I'm like, I'm not trying to ruin anything for tomorrow, but I do appreciate, especially I'll say, Corey, you've had to lead at times when Kevin decided not to do the show.
Yep.
Well, there's been plenty of times where you're like, I'm not doing it. I had a baby.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, he didn't.
Or I'm going on vacation.
Jess was the one who got cut open and they pulled the baby out of her.
Okay, that's...
what did you have to do? Jeez.
Yeah, what did you just had to sit there and watch?
You yelled at her.
That is true. I still dispute that. No, but I had to be there.
Ruben's he's in on this. He's like, yeah.
Why don't you shut up too, Ruben?
Nope.
But what I'm getting to is Kevin is the one who's had to put up with my... I have no effing clue where you're going, Mike, right now. And this is not on the run sheet. What are you doing?
Yeah, because when you and I have done that, whenever Kevin's decided to quit the show for a week or whatever, you and I, it's been very serious radio. And everybody's like, what is
that
happening right now?
Whoa. So there's certain things that I'll remember about Kevin I just want to bring up right now.
Oh, great.
One is recent, is that he likes asking Muslim people about Christmas.
And then we got to tell Marcus Simeon that story.
And it's just, I know we told it at the top of the show, but it was Marcus turning around and going, oh, so we're probably not getting him back on again. I was like, damn, Marcus, thanks.
And then another one would be, for me, Corey, which I don't know if you guys wanted to bring up tomorrow or not, will always be, I know Henry Ruggs did a horrible thing. Okay. But for me, Henry Ruggs is when Kevin did quit the show.
Yes.
Like that. I will always remember Henry Ruggs as Kevin had this big thing that he was leading up to. He led up to it and he looked at Corey and I for a response, and neither one of us really had a response. And that just ended the segment. It was like 11:10. I believe it was an 11 o'clock segment.
We cut early, and that's why you can hear me spike my headset.
5 more minutes in the segment, and Kevin just quit and left the, not left the building, but you left the room. And Corey and I were looking at each other, and we're like, hey, what were we supposed to do?
I don't know exactly what happened there.
Hey, that's a fair point. And by the way, if you watch that video, Reggie is stunned that we're going to break because it was so early. And that's why you can hear, like, if you see that video or listen to the audio, you can definitely hear me just spike my headphones on the desk, and they broke, and we put them out for a piece-a-thon. Look, that...
And they went. Then somebody bought them for a piece-a-thon. Thank you.
They did. So that was during... I'll make this super quick. That was during the most awful period of our lives, is we had had 2 miscarriages, and I had really unfortunately started conflating all kinds of things. Like, we even watched a stupid TV show that, like, we had to stop watching for a while because I got mad because of one of the subjects that they were dealing with. And, like, yeah, I definitely, like, put some things together that did not belong together. And I talked that over with Talking Doctor. And he goes, and how often has this happened? I was like, oh, I'll get mad. And he goes, no, that you just, like, stormed off and spiked your headset and broke it. And I go, well, just that part once. And he goes, do you think it might be about the other things that are going on in your life? And I go, oh, yeah, I didn't really think about that. So, yes. I promise it wasn't just such a fiery opinion about the Raiders and what they were doing.
Yeah,
that was. I'd also.
I'm sorry for that.
I also think that was the first moment where Mike realized you'll come back, because when you left, he was like, "What happened?" I was like, "I'll be honest, I don't know." That was the first time where I was like, "I don't know what exactly it just happened either," because I wasn't prepared for whatever just went down, and. Then Mike was like, should we get ready? Like, should we prepare a segment? And I was like, nah, he'll be back. He's going to be back. And he was like, I don't know, man. He was really mad. I was like, just give him some time.
I believe that's the most mad. You've gotten mad at me plenty of times. Plenty of times. But I believe that was the most mad. But you were also mad at Corey in the moment, too, because he didn't join in.
It was the most mad. But again, there were other factors that led to my misplaced anger. And I will agree, I can be a pain to work with, for sure, because I do get upset. I'm always trying to get better on that, but that's why I always try to walk out of the room, because I don't want to say something idiotic in that moment. And I was like, I just need to walk around and just calm down for a second.
Well, and I know this isn't my last day, tomorrow is, but I really do appreciate you guys that you have. I'm not like, this is too general. I'm not the easiest to work with. But I do bring a lot to the table that nobody else can bring.
Fair.
And I'm not talking about baseball. I'm just talking about, I am effing chaos.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't work. Like, it
also
sometimes
true.
It does not work. And it is an F minus of like a 5-minute situation. And I totally get it. But when we were talking to, I can't remember who we were. Oh, we were talking to Hixie, and he was talking about the risk that the young kid is making. And Bochy's like, I love it. As long as like this and this and this are in place and you take a risk and it doesn't work out, I understand the risk. And I have decided over time, screw it. I'm going to take this risk. It might piss off Kevin. It might piss off Corey. I'm pretty sure it's going to piss off Gavin Spittle.
Mm-hmm.
It might tick off the listener. Or it might be something that nobody else could have randomly come up with in my crazy ass brain.
Yes.
And it worked out to some kind of genius segment that is like, what the hell just happened? But that worked.
Can I tell you an example of that from just a couple years ago? Is when you and Corey became Jimmy Buffett historians on what I thought was a throwaway line. And then you two have 7 minutes of material about Mr. Margaritaville, and it was amazing.
That has been my favorite part of it, is Mike and I can look across and see, hey, it's time to F with Kevin just a little bit, and we know exactly where to start diving even deeper on that. And we see you recklessly over there getting, you know, getting bent out of shape, and we're just like, oh, this is even better. For us.
And I get it, because you put a lot of time and effort into the 4-hour show, as in this. Kevin is the one who comes up with the run sheet. Now, he's asking us for opinions and stuff. Like today, the Corey Seager thing happened, where I was like, hey, I think I want to do this Corey Seager thing. And so you have like this, like, we could do it tomorrow, but it's not a thing we have to do today. Obviously, I'd hope that you'd say I'd have to do it before Mike leaves the show.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And questions lead to great topics.
Yes. But Kevin puts together the 4 hours on how he believes this is going to work. This is going to keep the audience engaged for 4 hours. And if this is maybe looks like, guess what? It's 4 hours. It means it's 20 hours a week. There's sometimes we have segments that might not look like the most engaging, oh my gosh, keep you on the edge of your seat segment. But if we put it between these two segments, we think we can still hold you even if you're not interested in that segment. And that's what Kevin has to do, and Corey has to do it when Kevin is out. And Corey, you've done it when you and Kevin have done the show. I'm not saying you haven't done it, but that's the part where I'm like, I don't give a crap. You know, like, I'm going to you feel like, and I appreciate you for doing this, somebody has to do it, but then I will just all of a sudden go, F this crap. Like, if we were wrestling together.
You want to talk about big hurt at the gym.
And you're looking at me. Like, if we were wrestling.
Yes.
You'd be like, this is not part of the two. We 4 hours ago, we went over how this is going to go. And there's a little bit of leeway.
Yeah.
And we know where we're getting to the end. And I am like, hey, Kevin, in my brain, I'm like, don't worry about it. I know where the end's going to go now. And you're like, I have no effing clue where the end is going to go now. And you have rolled with the punches. And Corey, you have rolled with the punches along with me for this crazy ass ride. And it has gotten you guys in trouble because I won't take responsibility for it.
That's the truest thing that's been said in this entire segment.
But I ain't having an effing conversation about it because you're not going to understand my brain. I don't understand my brain sometimes. Just deal with it. And you guys have dealt with it great.
Somebody said the best bit was when talking about the big hurt and the wives at the gym. I remember that very clearly, too.
I mean, so look, maybe Tom Landry joins the show tomorrow.
Who knows?
You changed my perspective. Every time that commercial comes on, I think about all the marriages that the big hurt is breaking up, and maybe Doug Flutie one or two.
And it has been a fun, 6 years?
Almost.
It's been a very fun 6 years. I'm very happy. Like, a couple of years ago, I was like, Mike, I think you can do this. I think we can talk the Rangers into this. And I'm very happy you get this opportunity to be part of this thing, because it's going to be cool for you.
I'll get to say it tomorrow, but I truly do love you guys. Alec, I like you. I haven't got to know you that well.
Oh, but I like him a lot.
Alec, I like you a lot.
Well,
love is a strong word, but I love you two guys.
Thanks. Mike, I will tell you
love
this.
You too, buddy.
We have put a lot of effort into tomorrow's show, and I hope it's great, but sometimes I set my expectations too high.
Look, I'm honestly getting a little bit teary-eyed.
The
and
helium segment,
I'm
remember
looking
that?
At you two guys.
Oh,
the
my God. The helium segment was one of the craziest things ever.
We got to go.
But I will tell you this. We have put a lot of effort into tomorrow's show, and I, from a variety of places,
I'm excited, and I love that I know nothing about it.
I know,
I like it.
Okay, I think you will. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, why emotions are stupid with Corey Majors.
Oh man,
no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that actually sounds fun. Let's do that.